D-Mace Vingen and Donick 102.5, the game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, and Adam Vingen here with you. We are live at the Circus Sportsbook, Kentucky. David James is back at our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is about great service. Always about great service, I should say. Always. Not sometimes. Not occasionally. Always about great service. Before we shift gears back to the Titans, we do have a couple of callers on the college football playoff on our phone line. Let's start with Trey. Trey, thank you for calling and waiting. Please go ahead.
Hey, guys. How y'all doing today?
Good, thank you.
Hey, I wanted to ask y'all, each one of y'all, realistically, okay, forget about the team that Indiana had. Forget about the team that Pavia had. Do you honestly believe in your heart that Mendoza is better than Pavia?
Thank you for the call, Trey.
I think it's pretty clear that he is a better pro prospect. His game translates to the pro game better than Pavia.
But the Heisman Trophy is not about your pro prospects.
And that, I think that's the point. I think if you're looking at who's the better college football player, then that's where I think Pavia has his best argument. I think you could look at the stats. I think you can look at the degree of difficulty of the schedule that Pavia played and the team he played on, how many times his team was the underdog compared to Indiana. And this is splitting hairs, because Mendoza is a heck of a player and Indiana is a heck of a story. And I think ultimately the story, the narrative, is going to probably prevail if history repeats. But, you know, I do not bat an eye in saying, I try to take all of my Vanderbilt prism out of it. I think Pavia deserves the Heisman.
Based upon what Pavia has done, I think, you know, he deserves it, not just to be there. I think at one point we were saying he just needs to be there. But now, you know, he has a real opportunity to win. And if he does win it, I wouldn't be surprised, not one bit. It would be well deserved. I just think when you are the number one team in the country, because that's what they end up being, and have a moment that you had while playing the number one team in the country, that's what voters are looking at. And had Pavia been able to play in the SEC championship game, and there's no doubt that I don't believe that, you know, he would have played. I wouldn't have believed that he would have went out there, wouldn't have went out there and had a great game, because I think he would. But that last performance he had was just a week too early, because, you know, they just started. When did they open up the voting for Heisman?
Saturday.
Yeah, Saturday, and the game was over with. They had played last week, so had they opened it up that week, then okay, Pavia.
Early voting,
exactly.
Are we talking
Pavia
early voting?
Had more people voting for him, but I think because it opened up Saturday and Pavia didn't have a stage to play on, you know, it was almost like it was really, honestly, in my opinion, it was between whoever won that game, San or Mendoza.
And if that's a fringe benefit from your team playing in a conference championship game, you know, sometimes it's maybe not an advantage. It certainly wasn't for BYU. I guess it was okay for Alabama. But you see what I'm saying? Like, if that's a fringe benefit to the victor, go the spoils, I can live with that. I would ask this, and this may end up being a question that the Titans are dealing with right now, because we're not sure if there is a hands-down first pick in the draft quarterback, and Mendoza might be as good of a candidate as there is right now. Do you guys watch Mendoza? Like, when you watch Pavia every week, there is no doubt everything runs through him.
Of course.
He elevates everybody, everything about that program, from the actual play on the field to the residuals, the leadership, the swagger. He's got this huge impact. I have to admit, I don't watch Indiana play every week. But does Mendoza have that? Like, is he that good? Like, he hasn't blown me away, but he's obviously been, he's led his team to a undefeated season.
by the way, his numbers in the Big 12 title game, as Derek said, he made some huge throws,
yes,
including that
key
30,
throws at key times.
Yes,
no doubt, he made against that, a great defense.
Made that 33-yard pass with under 3 minutes left to help seal the game for the Hoosiers. So he made some huge throws. His numbers in the game, if you're just looking at the numbers, were unimpressive. 15 of 23 for 222 yards, a touchdown, and an interception.
He did more to help his team win that game than lose it. And when you're going up against the number one team in the country, people don't expect it to be perfect, you know, going against that defense. Again, I just think in this situation, last person that played may get the benefit of the last voting, you know, or the start of the voting and the end of the voting during the weekend, this past weekend. Again, I think Pavia has done enough, just like Vandy. I thought they did enough to make the college football playoffs. I think Pavia did more than enough to win the Heisman Trophy. But when you look at it, it's like when I went into – I started looking at this game, I'm like, man, it's between these two guys. Whoever wins this game, they're going to win the Heisman. That's just the way I felt at you know, watching it.
And there are 900 voters. You would love to think that, especially for the last two or three candidates, that all of those voters have watched all of the games. But the reality is we know that's not true. You would really have to watch Pavia every week.
You can look at the appreciation of who he is as a player.
Yes. The numbers side by side. He doesn't have to take a back seat to Mendoza. No. His numbers are better. If you look at the rushing yards, he's got way better numbers than Mendoza. So, but you know that some of the voters are going to open up the ballot and say, oh, undefeated. Hey, I saw that pass he threw against Ohio State.
They beat them one team in the country.
I'm voting for Mendoza. You know, like, but if you watch both teams every week, and I have not done this for Indiana, and I'm not a Heisman voter, I just wonder how you would feel.
Let's go to Gary on our phone line. Gary, thank you for waiting. Please go ahead.
Hey, I just wanted to ask y'all about Jordan White, offensive lineman from Vanderbilt. He got offensive lineman of the week two or three times. Does he have, or any other lineman have a shot at getting all conference? And does Clark Lee have a shot at getting SEC coach of the year?
No, thank you for the call, Gary. Now, I can't answer the offensive line question. That might be a better question for Willie. Of course, Clark Lee should have an opportunity to win the SEC Coach of the Year.
Well, I know Cignetti's going to win National Coach of the Year. Right. But, I mean, again, just like Diego, Clark Lee, he's done exactly what, you know, what he's supposed to do. He's building up that program, that excellent season. Should he be in the running or should he win Coach of the Year? Absolutely. But, hey, the Indiana story is a little bit better right now.
It may be
that way for Mendoza as far as the Heisman.
And
as well,
there are no stats for a coach.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? That's the other thing that's so arbitrary. And I vote for the coach of the year as an NHL broadcaster. And my colleagues, it's all the NHL broadcasters. We always struggle because it's hard.
Yeah.
Because there's always more that we put the finalists. We do 1, 2, 3. There's always 5 or 6 that are very worthy of winning the whole thing. What did you think about what that team was going to do beforehand? Who's overachieved the most? But there's a lot to be said for taking a team that was supposed to be really good and having them be undefeated.
Exactly.
So, look, Cignetti is an incredible story. Like, that is tough, but so was Clark Lee.
Chad says, in my mind, in the big games, Oregon and Ohio State, Mendoza made the big plays. I remember Pavia having costly turnovers in the Bama and Texas games that kept them from winning.
That
gives Mendoza the slight edge.
That's
to
what they're going
to
hold against.
Yes.
Because I went
fair.
Back
that's
I,
a fair argument.
Yeah, I went back and looked at Mendoza, and he's been consistent the whole season. I think I saw Diego had, I think, 4 or 5 games under 200 yards. And Mendoza had like 3, just under 200.
But I think if you look at the efficiency
yeah,
of the offense overall,
that's what I'm saying. Yeah,
Vanderbilt's offense was more efficient than Indiana's.
Yeah, but again, it's these margins. It's like, okay, what did Mendoza do, like Texas said, what did Mendoza do against Ohio State and Oregon? He made the plays necessary. What did Pavia do against Alabama in particular?
You're right. You're going to nitpick the big moment. And so you're almost holding him to perfection because had he played great in those two games, that's like the perfect season.
But
like,
that's how
I don't
close
know. I don't watch Mendoza.
Be.
Did Mendoza have a bad game? And there's some weeks where he didn't have.
He didn't have like that. I don't think he had that. And I could be wrong.
Look,
I don't
look
think
at
he had
the week
that
by
costly
week.
Game.
Well, that Diego obviously had.
Didn't lose
a game.
Yeah,
so, it didn't cost him that much.
The argument you're going to hear from Vanderbilt, and you've heard Diego Pavia himself say it, Vanderbilt's ascension coincides with the arrival of Diego Pavia. Mm-hmm. Indiana had a great season last season without Fernando Mendoza. Curtis Rourke was the quarterback of the Hoosiers last season. They had a great season.
But they didn't go undefeated. And they
That's true. I'm telling you what Vanderbilt is going to try to tell you about Pavia. Without Pavia, we're not here. Indiana was there or close to being where they are right now without Fernando Mendoza. That is an argument that's going to be made in Diego Pavia's
favor. Which brings up, again, the criteria, which is so simple. Best player in college football. Does something a guy did last year start, or you know, the start of the build, should that factor into this year, or should it only be in this year? It's a good philosophical question, and it's up to the voter, right? Well, nobody's going to tell the voter if the voter wants to put that in there, he can, he or she.
Yeah, but if you're talking just the pure best player in college football, I don't think saying and Mendoza would even be up there. I think it would be Diego. I think it would be Love. I think it'd be the Texas Tech quarterback. So there may be other guys in that sort of category when you're just talking about all around. Because Diego is the best all-around player.
Okay, so here's another question. Geographically, in the Southeastern Conference circles, will the voters who take up those, for lack of a better term, let's sound fancy, precincts, will they all vote for Mendoza? Will they all vote for Pavia? Just because they may have a better understanding of the history of Vanderbilt, the context of what he has done for them. They have a better understanding than maybe somebody voting in Big Ten country. And maybe those voters are a little more divided between, you know, because Notre Dame's up at that geographically as well. Is there a little bit of a split in votes? Or does Mendoza just carry all of that Big Ten territory?
Here's another thing I don't know. This is a better question for Joe Rexroth. So, Joe, if you're listening, text me. I'm curious how the Heisman Trophy ballots are dispersed. Mm-hmm. Willie, you mentioned voting for the Jack Adams Award in the NHL, the Coach of the Year Award. I vote for multiple awards in the NHL, including the Hart Trophy, the Calder Trophy, the Norris Trophy, the Selke Trophy, and the Pro Hockey Writers Association tries incredibly hard to make sure the conferences are all equally represented. They know that there are a ton of hockey writers in Toronto and Montreal and Ottawa and that part of Canada in the Northeast. They try to make sure that the Eastern Conference, the Western Conference, the Southeast, the West Coast, Canada, it's all as equally represented as it possibly can. So there's no bias. I don't know how that works in for the Heisman Trophy voting. I imagine that the majority of people voting for the Heisman are based in our area of the country, in the Southeast, and so on. So I'm not sure how that works. I'm not sure if that plays into Diego Pavia's advantage. Let's go to Steven on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHunting.com. Steven, thank you for calling. Thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Hey, what's up, guys? Always nice to be on the phone with the best Titans wide receiver of all time, Mr.
Thank
Derek
you. I really that really means a lot. Oh, you meant Derek.
Yeah. I thought he was going to say, like, the best show going, the best team.
Which he would have been
he
right.
He just wanted to pat D-Mace on the back. That's all he wanted to do.
There's only one Titan that wore that 8-5 the way he did, like Gruden said, with them quick feet on third down. But I just want to say, like, man, they have to fix the college football playoff for the simple fact that Tulane and James Madison, if they are to make it, it should be a first four play-in with the last two teams. So it should be like James Madison versus Vandy and Tulane against Notre Dame. And that's the first four to open it up. But you cannot have a college football playoff with James Madison and Tulane. I'm sorry. Texas would beat them. I mean, you can't say who would beat them, but there's so many other teams that we'd love to see. Vanderbilt had the season of dreams being made, and they cannot have a chance to close it out. I'm a Vols fan, but I would have rooted for them through and through, and it's just sad they didn't make it, man. I just want to hear y'all's thoughts.
Thank you for the call, Steven.
That's the difference between a Vanderbilt fan and a Tennessee fan.
Yes.
I do know a lot of Tennessee fans that grew up in Nashville. They appreciate Vanderbilt. And so they're kind of like, Tennessee's out. I'll root for Vanderbilt. You will never get it the other way around, right? A Vanderbilt fan will never say that, oh, I'm rooting for Tennessee. Now that Vanderbilt's out, I'll root for Tennessee. But that is the difference. But
it's an interesting idea.
I do like that idea. Because you can still say, look, we're giving you a shot. Let's be honest here. You probably aren't supposed to be here, but we want to be inclusive. You play in this division. We're going to give you an avenue, but you got to beat. You got to win an extra game. I'm for that.
Ross, you think
Clark Lee would sign up for that?
Yes.
You think Notre Dame would participate in that?
They played in the parking lot.
Ross Dellinger of Yahoo Sports put together what a 16-team college football playoff would have liked this year. Would have looked like this year based on the criteria. These would have been the matchups. Starting with 1 versus 16. Indiana versus JMU. Where is 2? Come on. Where is 2? I don't even see 2. Oh, Ohio State versus Tulane. Ohio State's still 2? Ohio State is still 2.
Oh, they're not.
Even after they lost to Indiana?
Yes, they moved down one spot.
Exactly.
So Indiana versus JMU. Ohio State versus Tulane. Georgia versus Vanderbilt in the 3-14 matchup.
Bring it!
Texas Tech versus Texas in the 4-13 matchup. This is not well spaced. Oregon versus BYU in the 5-12 matchup.
Oh, 5-12. Give it to me.
Ole Miss versus Notre Dame in the 6-11 matchup. Mm-hmm. Texas A&M versus Miami in the 7-10 matchup. Oklahoma versus Alabama in the 8-9 matchup.
Vanderbilt should be seeded 10th, Miami 14th.
See, you still complain.
I'm kidding.
615-737.
No, I'm not kidding.
615-737-1025. We'll continue to take your thoughts on the college football playoff, the Heisman Trophy race, and the Tennessee Titans, who defeated the Browns 31-29 yesterday in Ohio. 615-737-1025. We are presented by Bax Homeworks. Remodeling done right. Get a free estimate now at BAXHomeworks.com.
How much did the complimentary nature of today's football game in all three phases kind of allow you to do more of that where it wasn't all on you, or you not necessarily feeling like it's all on you that way?
I don't think it's all on me. If it is all on me, you know, that's the responsibility that I want. And I just think us playing complimentary football, you know, for, you know, majority part of the game, you know, it's what reason that won us to the game. Us getting some stops on defense, special teams making some plays for us, and then, you know, our guys on the outside and Tony Pollard making plays.
That was Cam Ward after the Titans defeated the Cleveland Browns 31-29 yesterday. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, and Adam Vingan here with you. We do have a text we need to read about Vanderbilt and Diego Pavia. I will try to do it justice, texter. let me get in the spirit here.
Okay.
Clear my throat.
You're good at this, by the way. This is something you channel the texter.
All right, here I go.
Channel the texter.
Still talking about Vanderbilt and Pavia? Oh, my God. The only bias is the local bias for Vanderbilt. Stop, please. Vanderbilt and Pavia are only succeeding in making themselves seem immature and petulant. Sore losers. All you need to do is move on. Pavia should get the award for most annoying player ever, wrote while at the stoplight. Please forgive the errors. I just couldn't believe you were still on this subject.
Listen, I'm going to be honest.
Thank you for texting while not driving at a stop, you know, at least being at a stoplight, putting that together.
Listen, you're right about one thing, at least for me. There is a bias. I'm going to tell you.
Against
I'm
Vanderbilt.
Biased. No, for Vanderbilt.
Oh, okay.
That's a bias for Vanderbilt, for Diego, because you can't, listen, I've watched, when we all have watched Pavia for the last 2 years, especially this season, and there is going to be this innate bias that you have, but it's not going to cause me to blindly just throw away anything that Pavia may not have accomplished on the field and say, oh, he should win it no matter what. Listen, he has proven to me, at least, And I know there are a lot of other people out there that feel the same. That's why he's going to New York. He's proven to me that he may just be the most valuable person on his team. And he is, if not, because it's not just about passing the football, throwing the football, even though his numbers stack up too. But it's about those other things that he does so well. Lamar Jackson won the Heisman. Why? Because he was a dual threat player. Hell of a quarterback, can run with the ball. Travis Hunter, he won. Why? Because he was dual threat. Diego Pavia is the same thing. He's a dual threat player. Not only does he do it from the pocket, he's shown he can, he also do it outside the pocket with his legs. Those intangible things that he does that I don't think, you know, a lot of people take note of. But he has proven that whether he wins it or not, that he was or is this season, you know, if not the best player, he was in the top two or three as far as best players in college football. And that means a lot. Now, I know he wants the hardware that would be, you know, a stamp on it. But listen, there's a bias there, but my bias isn't a blind bias, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think. Look, everybody has biases depending on where you are, where you grew up, who you rooted for. This whole – and, Adam, you are a trained journalist, right? You are trained to be objective and try to put all that aside.
Yes.
But everybody's human at the same time. You have to try to sift through and ask yourself, are you being fair? Like, there's a difference between knowing that you have some built-in biases and still being able to make objective points – within that, but I mean, is that guy most annoying player? Obviously, he's not. He's clearly not a Vanderbilt fan. I don't know if he's a Tennessee fan or something like that. I get the turnoff by some. Diego Pavia is not for everybody, especially no. You know, if you are rooting against him. But look, this is a legit story, right? This is the week to talk about it. Are we still talking about it? Yeah, because the vote's still on.
Yeah, they hadn't.
Like, you know, I promise, we're not going to be talking about this in 2 weeks. So if we do that, then that guy's going to run off the road.
Well, the texter has responded and said, we've heard it all over and over ad nauseum, and that's the point.
Well, it's the week of the voting.
Yeah, it's the week of the voting.
Voting is
still talk open. About it. I get what you're saying, but to the texter, there are also people that haven't heard this. You know,
right?
That are probably listening for the first time.
And now, some self-reflection from the texter, saying, "I kept it going." Ugh, that's true. You brought this on yourself. If you wouldn't have texted that, maybe we would have moved on to something else. This
you
is on
kept
you,
us here, texter. Thank you for texting that, though.
But look,
he loves it. Yes. He loves us. You love us. It's all good.
And look, as you said, Willie, Diego Pavia is not for everybody. He's brash. He's loud. But you know what he did this season? He backed it up.
You remember, that was a big thing. At SEC Media Day, Coach Willie was very conflicted.
Yes.
Right? And I was saying, the question I had before the season started, all of the extra attention for what he did last year, and all the extra benefits that come with that, with NIL. Like, don't think for a moment that going from an unknown to what he did after that first year didn't get him a big, big raise in payment and a different outlook on life with, you know, life-changing kind of money, at least in the short term.
Mm-hmm. Look.
So what did he do with it, right? I was. Does he stay hungry? Does he stay the underdog? Does he stay the feisty guy? Does he get the big head and say, hey, what am I doing after the game? You know, like he still does all that.
Oh,
he was at the what was he at?
UFC.
UFC?
Yeah.
Like, you see him at the first row of the Predators. Like, he's everywhere. But he did not lose the eye of the tiger one bit.
And he made
That's impressive.
He made headlines this summer. We talked about it when he went on Bussin' with the Boys and said Vanderbilt is going to run the state of Tennessee. And guess what? Had Vanderbilt gone to Tennessee a couple of weeks ago and pooped their pants, for lack of a better phrase, you know, Vols fans listening, that you would have come for Pavia. We would have heard it on the phone line, seen it on the text line, and you would have been justified for feeling that way. But what did Diego Pavia do? He went into Neyland Stadium and he whipped that ass. That's what he did. He backed it up. And he did have a couple of rough performances against Alabama early on against Texas. And Vanderbilt isn't in the college football playoff. But you cannot deny that Diego Pavia talked the talk and he walked the walk. So you can be annoyed by him. I get it. But you cannot deny the fact that by and large he backed it up.
And that's what you want to see. If you're going to come out and proclaim all of these things and be that brass, then you got to back it up. And he did. You know, we talk about, you know, being on certain shows, Busting with the Boys, or when he went on SEC media, you know, SEC channel, and told on the Feinbaum show and told him, hey, listen, we, you know, this is what I see for my team.
Paul,
you know,
Feinbaum thought he was kidding.
Yeah, and he
when
thought
he
was
said,
kidding.
Our goal is to win the national
and
championship.
And he thought he was kidding.
Which unfortunately isn't going to happen.
But it wasn't because of – it's not for the lack of them not being a – they were a damn good team.
Yes. Yes. Know? It wasn't like he said that and they went 3-9.
Exactly. Absolutely.
They went 10-2. They had the best season in program history.
And honestly, do you think Paul Feinbaum, as he was listening to that, thought there was any way that Vanderbilt would do anything more than maybe go 7-5 at best with the schedule that at the time looked as daunting as it did?
Probably not.
They overachieved the best case scenario by at least 3 games.
Yes.
One texter, Josh, and I'm prefacing this by saying Josh is saying this, not me. I'm only reading the text. Pavia's mom is hot. Give him the Heisman.
Did you go in there and look for that text?
It's the first text on the text line right now. I don't know many Joshes. It says, and I quote, Pavia's mom is hot. Give him the Heisman. That was me reading his text. That was not me saying it.
I think there's one particular person you want to make sure they know
exactly.
That.
Exactly. Absolutely.
Love you.
Hopefully
Bobby.
She's not listening.
Yes. No, I mean –
that doesn't count in the Heisman voting, but I get your point, Josh.
No, it doesn't.
I get your point, Josh. One texter says, in aspects of the Heisman, I didn't see, or in regards to the Heisman, I believe is what the texter means, I didn't see anything out of Mendoza that showed me that he won the game against Ohio State. He played well, but Diego puts Vanderbilt on his shoulders. Mendoza doesn't seem like he can shoulder the load so much, and it's more Kirk Cignetti. Again, I don't watch enough Indiana football to be able to tell you one way or another. His stat line in the game wasn't impressive, just looking at the box score, but that's why you can't just look at the box score. Mendoza made some outstanding, critical throws, including that throw at the end of the game, which Derek said was his Heisman moment. So I'm not going to take that away from Mendoza.
Well, it was a hard-nosed, defensive field position battle. Mm-hmm. Just like, you know, there were people saying, well, let's take the Vanderbilt-Missouri game, which is a similar kind of game. Mm-hmm. Pavia's numbers weren't great in that game, but nobody's offensive numbers were great in that game. And Pavia made the key plays. He scored a big touchdown at the end. And it was just a great college football game, just like Saturday night was a great college football game. So sometimes it goes beyond did you pass for 300 yards or something like that, right? You have to look at let it beyond the numbers on the sheet.
One texter says, this is nothing new with Vandy. Before Penn State joined the Big Ten, yes, I'm old, they were snubbed for national championships numerous times. That's Wayne, and that's Wayne on our text line.
And then Penn State got smart and said, you know what, let's go join the Big Ten. They joined the Big Ten in 1994, I think?
I think that's right.
Yeah,
now, they did win some national titles before they were in the Big Ten. So
exactly.
The texter is right. Mm-hmm. They were snubbed a few times, but there were
but
times
they had
where they
to
got
get
in
it,
there.
And they felt they had to get into a conference after that. Yeah.
615-737-1025 will take your thoughts on the college football playoff bracket, the Heisman Trophy race, the Titans win. All of it is on the table. 615-737-1025. We'll wrap up the show. Coming up next, Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game. Mace Vingan and Donick, 1025 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you, wrapping up at the Circus Sportsbook Kentucky. If you're looking for a place to watch the Monday night football matchup between the Eagles and the Chargers, a solid matchup tonight. 2-8-4 teams on Monday night football. If you're looking for a place to watch the game, come on up to the Circus Sportsbook Kentucky. Just a short drive from Nashville, Tennessee. John on our text line says, Penn State's first year in the Big Ten was 1993. That was my freshman year, and I was at the first game. 1994 was when they got hosed after undefeated.
Yes, you're right.
But Nebraska also went undefeated and was voted number one all before the BCS.
Yes, you're right. We didn't play them. We played them my sophomore year. That's why I thought it was 94. I don't think we played Penn State my freshman year.
Let's go to Tim on our phone line, driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com. Tim, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. This deal with and the texter that sent in about Pavia, we all know who he roots for, and he's just butthurt because they got beat. But let me throw out a little thing. Right now, Pavia is accounted for and helped Vanderbilt in two seasons win 17 games. We win the bowl game, we're going to win 18 games in two seasons. I've seen guys with 4 and 5 year careers at Vanderbilt that hadn't won 18 games in their career. This kid will make a pitch on an option and go downfield and lay his body on the line to block somebody. He does whatever it takes to win the game.
Thank you for the call, Tim.
These are the things you see every week if you watch him. It is different. It is different than anybody else, really. Like when I've watched some Indiana games. I haven't watched all of them. Mendoza just looks like a great college quarterback who could be a really good pro someday. But the question is, how do you value the ability to run and do all of those things, like the blocks, mm-hmm. the pitches on the option that are perfectly timed, the understanding of the offense, elevating everybody around him? I don't know if Mendoza really measures up in those things.
One texter says, with the formula that was given to the committee with all of the requirements to get in, they got it right. That's the part that everyone's missing with everything that was agreed upon going to the 12-team playoff. They get it right whether you think it's the best 12 or not. Also, nobody got snubbed. If you win, you get in. If everyone had a schedule, you get a chance to go beat your teams and you get in. Simple.
You can't get wrong. Right, I don't think there's anybody in there that's completely undeserving of being in there.
The explanation.
There's always going to be extra. So if they were going in Carolina, there was the guy. There's always that guy. Hey, they just need to go to 16. I was like, if they go to 16, there'll be twice as many teams that feel like they get screwed. So it's a no-win situation. I just want to see a better process where somebody can say, look, it was a tough decision. We had to make tough decisions. Here's what we did, and make more sense, because they don't make any sense.
Now, Rex Rode wrote a column for The Athletic, and I hope I am summarizing it properly. The College Football Playoff Committee needs significantly more transparency.
Yes.
We need to know exactly what numbers they're looking at, which numbers they prioritize over others. We know about strength of schedule and strength of record and all of those things. But there are other factors that go into making these decisions that we are not privy to. I think the College Football Playoff Committee needs to be much more transparent than it has been, because the explanations from the committee chairs have been terrible, especially terrible this season. We talked about it last week. I'm not trying to trigger Willie here, mm-hmm. but the whole thing about, well, Vanderbilt doesn't have a signature win after beating Tennessee. Well, it was a signature win at the time. You moved them out of the College Football Top 25, so now it's not a signature win? Like, something like that. The explanation.
Right, and at the same time, talk about Miami or Notre Dame's win over Pitt as a signature win. When we know, and Hunter Yurachek knows, that Pitt and Tennessee on a neutral field, Tennessee is a significant favorite.
And in the week that Tennessee hosted Vanderbilt and Miami played Pitt, Tennessee was ranked higher in the playoff rankings than Pitt. Tennessee was, I believe, 19th. Pitt was 22nd.
So you can't float BS past people who watch this stuff like a hawk. That's the thing that I don't understand why these guys don't get this. Mitch Light made a good point last week. He's like, you know, these people aren't radio guys. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not TV people. They don't talk for a living necessarily. They probably have good enough communication skills to become an athletic director or whatever. But, man, I've heard a lot of committee chairs. That is the worst job I've ever seen of communicating the process. It's not even close.
But there's no – I mean, listen, there's no penalty for them if they seem to have gotten it wrong or if the message was all bungled and came out all wrong. There's no like repercussions for them. So, you know, you think they're going to change? Probably not. There's always going to be something in there that comes in last minute. Oh, we thought about this, and this is how we're going to rank them. It's like, y'all keep moving. It's not even that y'all moving a goalpost further back. Y'all just moving it around. It's like y'all moving it within. It's just like stick to like a few things and base it on that instead of saying, well, no, we got to add this in here or we got to delete this or it works for that conference, but it doesn't work for that conference.
Well, one point that was made yesterday when the College Football Playoff Committee explained how Miami got in over Notre Dame, they talked about the head-to-head. The College Football Playoff Committee has known about Miami's win against Notre Dame for 3 months. It didn't just
right.
happen.
That was pointed out a bunch of places.
It's just because I believe Notre Dame came in at number 10 in the initial rankings, and Miami was 18th. And over time, Miami closed the gap. They just didn't decide to pull out the head-to-head card until they were right next to each other. But Miami, by that logic, should have been ahead of Notre Dame mm-hmm. the entire time. It shouldn't have been, oops, now you guys are next to each other for the first time. Sorry, Notre Dame. That is another example of the committee, you know, tying itself into knots to try to make a point. Caleb on our text line about the group of five members of the College Football Playoff. No one wants to watch it. And the inclusive stuff is for the birds. Not every team is a big dog team. It's a privilege, not a handout, to be in a place where you can play for it all.
Listen, it's not like they've earned it. Now, they went and they did what they were like teams like JMU or Tulane.
Yeah.
It's not like they earned it. They went and they played their schedule and they beat the teams on their schedule. And then they won their championship game, their conference championship game. So it's not like, oh, you know, we're just going to give it to you just because. No, they went out and played their games. Now, with that, do you think that, you know, them getting in, it'll be a good game with who they're going to play in a playoff? Probably not, but that doesn't mean that they didn't do the things that were required of them to do. They did everything they were required to do, and when they got a chance to fill out their application to one of the colleges, if I'm a student, they got in. Why? Because they did exactly what they were supposed to do during high school and then on a test, and they did everything. So it was like, okay, we got to put them in.
How do we
leave them out?
I'm just hoping that Tulane and JMU give Ole Miss and Oregon competitive games.
It would be best for the committee if they do.
Yes.
Right, because if, as I said earlier, if Ole Miss does what it did to Tulane in September and win 45-10 at home, we're going to have problems.
So one more point about the head-to-head, because I've seen committees, they waffle and they cherry-pick when it's time to bring up the head-to-head. That's the criticism here, is they've known, like you said, since August 31st
yes.
that Miami did indeed beat Notre Dame.
Yes.
Down at the Orange Bowl, which I think is significant. That's a detail. It was at home. If that game were at Notre Dame, could it have been different? You know, Vanderbilt lost two games both on the road. If those games were at home, could it have been different? Maybe. But that's the schedule. But if it's a two-team comparison between Miami and Notre Dame, it's easier to use the head-to-head and make yourself look smart. Oh, yeah. But it's arbitrary that you make it a two-team comparison. If you did a blind resume of Miami, Notre Dame, and Vanderbilt, you took the names off the screen, and you put the strength of schedule, the strength of record, all of those metrics, then it's a three-team discussion. And with one spot, that takes away the significance of the head-to-head. So it's a tricky one for a committee. And once again, that's where I think Vanderbilt would have their best argument. But conveniently, they took Vanderbilt out of the discussion the week before. They never let Vanderbilt into the discussion, even though their strength of schedule and strength of record is better than Notre Dame and Miami. That's not bias. That's not subjective. That is objective. With the numbers, but they made it easier. Oh, let's find out. How do we get Vanderbilt out of this conversation? Oh, we can move Tennessee out of the rank. Oh, they don't have a signature win. Let's put them off to the side. Oh, now we can decide between Notre Dame and Miami. Oh, head-to-head, we can bring that in there. It's all convenience. It's there was no, bait and switch.
I don't think there was really ever a true consideration for Vanderbilt.
Nope.
I don't think there ever
was.
Nice story. You know, coach did a great job. Diego, you know, he's entertaining and all of this. But nah.
It's Vanderbilt.
It's Vanderbilt.
Willie, will you do us the honors and give us one more?
It's Vanderbilt.
Which one do you want?
What you heard David and Derek.
You can't lose to Vanderbilt.
Not Vanderbilt.
We got to win national championships, and we got to do better at our coach. And you can't lose to Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt shouldn't even be in the SEC.
But you know what? I'm going to be watching the ReliaQuest Bowl New Year's Eve against Iowa and beautiful Tampa, Florida. I will be cheering on the Commodores in that game. But that'll do it for us today. Great participation, as always, on our phone and text lines. We will be live at Bridgestone Arena tomorrow. Predators host the league-leading Colorado Avalanche, a rare nationally televised game for the Nashville Predators.
8:30.
Willie gets the night off.
Get a little nap in the afternoon.
For the 8:30 p.m. Central start in that game, Barry Trotz will join us live from Barrel House. Trevor Maddich will join us as well. We will talk to you tomorrow at 3 o'clock.
Be love, love on your people. Have a safe, blessed, and wonderful day. I love you. The team loves you. You hear that song. Don't you ever forget about us, because we will not forget about you. See you tomorrow, 3 p.m. on 102.5 The Game. Peace.